Do you hear that funny noise? It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast with some assembly required. Searching for a new ninth planet ever since that Pluto incident, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast time again. This time comes around every couple of days. And I'll tell you, it's taking me through my youth into my middle age. It will follow me to my grave, I'm sure, but I'm happy to do it because I'm being told by more and more people all the time that the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast has been entertaining and helpful and having them feel more comfortable with the passage of their lives from Obamacare to Medicare. We don't answer every question in every episode, but we do address the whole concept of Medicare and the transition from pre-65 to after 65 health insurance coverage. We address that in every episode, and frankly, it is the kind of thing that people need to be told is not going to be frightening. It will not cause you angst and fear and trepidation. It should be something to look forward to because most people are actually going to find that the cost of their coverage, thanks to the largesse of the federal government, is going to be lower and the quality of their coverage is going to be higher. So that's what we're trying to convince people. Don't be afraid of Medicare. Embrace it. Before we start, I want to announce something here while Randy is busy. He's occupied elsewhere. I took a look into the program that controls the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, and I saw that we have between in the last week in June, we had most of our people, of course, downloading the program from the United States, but we've got a few from Canada. I'm guessing that a lot of those are my relatives, my sister and her children, like the announcer you heard at the beginning of every episode, Drew McMillan. He is a Canadian entertainer and television personality. So we've got a fairly sizable chunk of Canadians, but I'm thinking a lot of those are relatives, friends, and people that they get together with every 3 days and kind of have a listening party for. What surprised me is that we have a download contingent in Italy, another one in France, and slightly smaller ones in Australia, Belgium, Spain, India, and Russia. So I don't know what these people are doing, but maybe they're anticipating moving to the United States, or maybe they're expats hoping to return and begin participation in the Medicare program. But I thought it was interesting. Now, Randy didn't know anything about that, but I'm going to ask him to join us right now. Randy, are you there, Randy?
Oh, you woke me up out of my nap.
I know. Every day you manage to catch a couple of winks while I'm introducing the episode. So,
you know, I do, based on what you just said, though, that's very interesting information. I think that deserves a name change.
Oh,
it should be Medicare for the Lazy Man International.
Well, the problem is that every time we change the name, it takes like 2 years to figure out all the places that have to be changed. I'm thinking let's leave well enough alone. I mean, the concept of a lazy person is pretty much universal, I think. So maybe that's why we have these listeners in all these foreign countries. They're wondering if they can find new ways to be lazy. And I might just be the guy to tell them how to do it.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that because you're a pretty hardworking fellow yourself. But the other thing I noticed, I saw some stats when I was working, you know, putting the publishing the new podcast. Every once in a while, I take a look at the stats. Not the ones you look at, but, you know, the daily downloads, you know, we're running about, 300, 400 a day sometimes. And I think that you should be congratulated because you worked very hard on this. And now you're beginning to reap reap your rewards from sowing the corn.
Well, that's very kind of you, but it wouldn't be possible to have this kind of success if you weren't working equally hard on the other side, on the thankless mechanical side of things, the engineering side, because you make the whole thing sound a lot better than it otherwise would. Now, when I listen to an episode, I know that there's a difference in quality, and that's because we're using Zoom because we're so far apart, but you make it work. Without your understanding of what needed to be done, we wouldn't even be able to do this. So kudos to you, sir, for helping out.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
I heard something kind of funny. I told Randy earlier, I've been listening to Gilbert Gottfried's podcast because he interviews a lot of people in show business, and there are a lot of interesting, funny stories that come out of that interview process. And I'm only up to episodes that were recorded in, I think, 2015. But one of the people he interviewed was Jackie the Joke Man Martling. And of course, Jackie Martling told a whole bunch of jokes because that's what he does, Jackie the Joke Man. I can't tell any of them on a family-oriented podcast. But they did ask him about his departure from the Howard Stern Show. And he said basically one of the interesting things was that he was just sick and tired of having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning in order to be available for the morning Howard Stern radio show back when it was broadcast on terrestrial radio in New York and then syndicated to a lot of other cities around the country. He said he just couldn't, he could not bring himself to take a nap in the middle of the day, and he could not bring himself to go to bed early so that he could get 8 hours of sleep. And he said every night he'd be sitting there thinking, well, I want to watch TV until 11 o'clock on the East Coast, and I have to get up at 4, so I'm just going to be dead tired. He could never bring himself to do it. And then he said, and now that I've been off the show for 5 years, and I'm age 67, he said, all I want to do is nap. All I want to do is sleep. I would gladly sleep 10 hours before my 4 o'clock in the morning shift so that I could be well rested at all times. So frankly, I'd like to go back now that I have the problem solved. But anyway, he's a funny guy, and I thoroughly enjoyed Gilbert Gottfried's interview with him. But I'm hoping you will enjoy a little article I ran across, and I haven't even really read this thing yet, but it says termination letters emphasize Medicare horror stories. I'm always up for a good Medicare horror story. This was written by somebody named Ron Schinkman in December of 2010. So it's basically about 10 and a half years old, and I'm hoping it's worthwhile. So this guy fancies himself to be a humor writer, I guess. He says, Edgar Allan Poe and Mary Shelley are great sources of Gothic fiction, but recent CMS is the branch of the federal government that oversees Medicare. It really stands for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So they don't even know how to spell their own acronym. It should be CMMS, but the way they spell it, they drop one M, it's CMS. But anyway, they send out termination and suspension letters sent to Medicare Advantage and Part D drug plans. They give these masters of horror a run for their money. The letters spoke of cancer patients goaded into switching coverage by unscrupulous brokers and missing weeks of chemotherapy or anti-tumor medications, or the disabled girl who had her seizure medication cut off when her father was conned into making a similar change. That led to an 18-day hospitalization and pressure ulcers. Or the multiple patients forced to undergo unnecessary cardiac catheterization and other invasive procedures to convince their plan. For instance, it gives the name of a plan here. I'm not going to do that because I'm sure their lawyers are just waiting for somebody to sue. But anyway, to convince their plan that they needed medications the federal law said they were already entitled to receive. I would say it's horrifying. They're praying for profit, said Judy Dugan, a one-time Los Angeles Times editorial writer who is now research director for Consumer Watchdog, an advocacy group that has been giving heartburn to the insurance industry for the past quarter century. Dugan, in particular, singled out HealthNet, I'm sorry I said that. Anyway, this is 11, 10 years ago. Maybe they fixed everything. They're probably fine now. It was suspended from enrolling any new lives last month after marketing its plans without the standard two-week transition period. This company had so systematically denied drugs to patients who needed them, including anti-seizure and AIDS prescriptions, that CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services spokesman, Peter Ashkenaz, told me agency officials were concerned not doing something immediately would endanger the health and even the lives of its Medicare enrollees. This company is still allowed to tend to its 650,000 current Medicare Advantage and Part D enrollees, likely in part because moving them to another insurer in a short period of time would demand a colossal effort. Nevertheless, CMS's fury at this company is palpable. Its suspension letter is a masterpiece of controlled anger and exasperation, distilling how the plan has committed egregious breaches of all of its Medicare contracts for years and all but brushed off repeated warnings to shape up. This company did not respond to my inquiries either, the author says, although the plan did post a prepared statement from a chief executive officer. And it read in part, the so-and-so company takes its obligations to Medicare members seriously. We hope in the next months we can demonstrate that we have successfully addressed the key issues that CMS has raised. We are committed to the Medicare program and look forward to serving new Medicare beneficiaries once again. A reasonable person might expect this person to publicly apologize to enrollees and camouflage his eagerness to resume a growing business his employees clearly cannot manage. But since not a penny of the $1.6 million he received in incentive pay last year, out of $3 million total compensation, since not a penny of that was tied to ensuring elderly and disabled people in his charge got their medicine, you can hardly expect him to sound passionate about doing so now. Remarkably, this guy's canned drone, that's pretty intense there. His canned drone was better than what the author got from a different company. That company, let's see, that insurer is responsible for the disabled girl who developed bed sores. Their spokesperson actually described its response as approved talking points. Medicare celebrated its 45th anniversary last summer. That'd be in the neighborhood of 55 or 56 years now. Observance of this milestone was accompanied by a disheartening prospect that, like many American institutions, its best times are behind it. When businesses, unlike HealthNet and Acadia, when businesses demonstrate manifest indifference toward Medicare enrollees, they abet this dread. In other words, they encourage people to be overly concerned about their safety and well-being. Few historians or journalists reminisce this year about the Medicare signing ceremony. After President Lyndon Johnson inked the historic program into law, he handed out the first Medicare card to Harry Truman. That turned out to be a question, a trivia question that Dominic Regina fed to Randy, and I knew the answer. I'm so proud of myself. Truman got the very first Medicare card. Anyway, Truman had been the first president to champion universal health care coverage. Leave it to a Democrat to want a single payer plan to increase the amount of government. Let's make government bigger and slower and stupider. Truman, and then they talked about Johnson. Neither man knew the creation of Medicare more likely signaled the end of an era than a beginning. Both came from modest rural backgrounds. Truman spent 2 years in an obscure law school before dropping out and never earned a college degree. Johnson's diploma was from a teacher's college in the Texas Hill Country, so backward, his biographers have inferred that it wasn't worth the paper it was printed on. Both men entered their prime during the Great Depression and worried about money well into middle age. Truman was still selling automobile club memberships in his 40s to feed his family. In other words, they were the last true underdogs to be elected president. Both clearly understood what Medicare meant for their constituents. In the decades since, Medicare has been a source of hand-wringing rather than triumph. Economists worry about the prospect of the Medicare Trust Fund going bust, while physicians grumble that they'll stop treating enrollees if they don't get paid more. It's a disheartening culture of diminished expectations that provides cover to a much more malignant one of naked greed. Meanwhile, commercial health plans keep grabbing more and more Medicare enrollees for their own. They slather administrative costs like multi-million dollar CEO salaries. Frankly, I'm not worried about CEO salaries. I believe that a lot of these people really earn the big bucks that they're paid. But anyway, they slather these salaries onto the care that they broker and that are about five times higher than what Medicare spends to run things on its own. I don't believe that either. I think private industry always runs things more efficiently than the government could ever possibly do. So then it goes on to say the plans take their profits from these ventures and contribute hand over fist to key PACs. Remember when political action committees or PACs were a big deal? So anyway, they contribute to key PACs so Congress will keep on handing them more control over Medicare. When those plans violate Medicare regulations, they pile on even more costs by prompting easily preventable hospitalizations and unneeded procedures. Now, that's the reason that we're talking about this today, is that people are mistreated by the plans who have some latitude as to what they're going to be treated with or by. And often the most egregious situations are caused by Medicare Advantage plans. That's the whole point that we're talking about this stuff, is Medicare Advantage plans have created some situations that endanger their enrollees' health, safety, and welfare. So it goes on to say, Medicare enrollees who are either aged or infirmed are the underdogs in this new narrative, and they have no one except a few CMS officials to champion them. They're getting duped into Medicare Advantage and Part D plans that have cut their benefits and disrupted their care. And in some cases, when they filed complaints, the insurance agents who tricked them into changing their coverage chewed them out. In her characteristically blunt manner, Dugan suggested an antidote for this type of behavior, prompt the Justice Department to investigate and to prosecute some of these plans, their executives, and their sleazemeister sales reps. It's not exactly the angry villagers with pitchforks and torches scenario that is the denouement of many a horror tale, but it's a far better ending than the one Medicare and its beneficiaries are now stumbling toward. So that's what this this author's view of some of the behavior patterns of Medicare Advantage plans and prescription drug plans has been towards their hapless enrollees. Pretty sad story, huh?
I'm shocked, Doug. I can't believe that Joe Namath would have anything to do with such a thing.
He was not a twinkle in the Medicare bully's eye at that point, because this was 10 years ago, but he came along to help, foster the marketing efforts, and he's doing a stellar job. Everybody talks about Joe Namath's ads.
There, now granted, people that listen to us, they can think, oh, maybe they've got an axe to grind about Medicare Advantage plans, but all they have to do is take a look around, and there's plenty of guys like you and plenty of podcasts that tell you right off the get-go, would you rather buy a Medicare Advantage plan or slam your finger in a car door?
I know the answer to that.
I do too. Here's what it is?
Slam your finger in a car door, because eventually.
And you know why that is?
I don't know why that is.
Eventually, it stops hurting. Yeah, Medicare Advantage plans don't.
did I ever tell you about my trip to Florida when I was 10 years old? I spent a month in Florida, and we were at a John Hancock convention for the first part of that month. And so we're going to move from one hotel to another hotel. And a guy that I didn't know, but he was a friend of my parents from the company. I don't know what part of the country he was headquartered in, but he helped my father load baggage into the car for our trip to a different hotel. And then he went, oh, that's bad. And my father said, what? And I was goofing around in the sand or something. And he said, I just cut my finger off.
Holy bananas.
There's a weird noise going on behind you. He said, I just cut my finger off. And I am now looking at the stump of my finger. So I said, well, or my father said, well, let's find that thing and get you to a hospital to put it right back on. Now, this is 1958, mind you. So I don't know how successful they would have been at reattaching a finger, but they and I'm under the car looking for the finger. I'll help you. And my father's going, get out of here. What's wrong with you? So what happened was, they took him to the hospital. We all moved to a different hotel. And there's an interloper next to you there. Turn to your right.
Oh, my gosh. I see now that there's an interloper on in our studio.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, so I was at the new hotel. I was in the ocean, and I could see the balcony, a big balcony off of my parents' room. And there was a cocktail party forming, as there was every night. They were never far from the cocktails. Yeah. And the guy showed up after having been at the hospital most of the day, and he had a big old bandage on what looked like it could have been a stump, or maybe they tried to reattach his finger. All the ladies were in their cocktail finery. And I went up the beach and, you know, kind of went to get a Coke or something. And they were all asking him or telling him what a brave guy he was for enduring that pain of having his finger cut off. And he kept saying, nope, not a problem for me. I'm not in pain at all. I guess I'm just more of a man than a lot of people are. And within 30 days, he was dead from a brain tumor that had interfered with his pain receptors. And nobody thought to think that that might've been a problem.
Oh my God. No kidding. Seriously?
He did not feel pain when his finger was cut off, and nobody seemed to think that was a problem back in 1958. Well, lucky guy. He doesn't need any painkillers then.
No, that's a good story. I mean, it's a sad story, but it's a really interesting story.
I got a million of them, so come on back for the next episode of the.
Okay, absolutely. Doug's got a million stories. It's just so much fun talking to him. But you know, guess what? We need to land the plane. We are out of gas. We are out of food, and more importantly, the galley is out of beer. So we need to get this plane on the ground.
Right, pronto.
Absolutely. So thank you for joining us. We always thank you for joining us, because you could have been 150 different places listening to 150 different podcasts, but you weren't. You were listening to ours, which we thoroughly appreciate, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, and ultimately to do the next step that will make your life so much easier is go buy a copy of the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, easiest and what is it, Guy Dimmer?
Simplest and easiest, or easiest and simplest? I think it's simplest and easiest. Gee, if I had a book laying around here, I could tell you.
I'm going to find out what it is, and I've always mixed them around. I'm going to stick it on a sticky right here on my cupboard, so I won't mess it up.
Don't make it too permanent, because I'll be writing another one in another couple of months. So make it easy to remove.
So, yeah, absolutely. We've got the book. That's a black and white version from Amazon. If you like color, you can go to Barnes & Noble. If you like to listen to your books, you can go back to Amazon and get yourself an audio version. Or if you like to carry it around on your Kindle and read it at just about any point in the day, you can go back to Amazon and pick that one up too.
Lots of options. In fact, you ought to buy one of each, because they each have their place.
Yeah,
absolutely. For the Medicare aficionado.
And we are in the second half of the year now, so don't forget, these make great stocking stuffers.
Excellent. They do fit in stockings very nicely. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you real soon.
Yep. Thank you. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. Bye-bye.